serious question. Do you think the Veep has any say in the musical acts for inauguration?
No, but we did get some good ones though, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I just have a hard time imagining Joe being like, we got to get J-Lo. I need to hear on the floor.
J-Lo has to come do it.
I feel like that's got to be coming from Harris, right? I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today,
Eugene Daniels, White House reporter and Playbook co-author. Very strange to say that out loud.
Eugene Daniels, one of the new authors of Politico Playbook, on the eve of Inauguration Day, looks at America's next vice president and what it'll mean for the country when she takes office tomorrow.
You know, there are so many parts of her life that have led her here. But I think for Kamala Harris, you know, she's still very young, but the years that got us to this point, you have to start when she was the Attorney General of California.
And California Democrats, when we pull together, we are too big to fail.
She had become the first Black woman to hold that role in California. When you talk to people who are around her at that time, the thing they say mostly is that, you know, she puts her head down and she just goes. You know what I mean? And there's this aspect of her history, story that people tell, that I think at the beginning they didn't have desks or something. And she would just like grab a chair and just sit on it and just get to work. And like, that's how, when you talk to people who are around her before she came to the Senate, that's the way people think about Kamala Harris.
This morning, we are very proud to announce a tremendous victory for California. As a result of 13 months of intense discussions, sometimes battle, we have delivered to California $18 billion in relief for California's homeowners.
Then you go to her Senate run.
Today, California's Attorney General Kamala Harris announced that she will indeed run for the U.S. Senate. Her announcement comes just days after current California.
Only the second Black woman to be elected a senator in the United States, which is kind of wild if you think about it.
Yeah.
And now to be the first woman, AAPI, Black person to be the vice president. Everything in her life is about being first.
But while I may be the first woman in this office, I will not be the last.
Right? Like, she's always either the first or the only at that time. And she knows what that role looks like. And she knows how to navigate those waters.
Every little girl watching tonight sees that this is a country of possibilities.
Because they can be really choppy, right? I'm working on this story now that's going to come out on Inauguration Day about the pressures of being the first. And I'm talking to, you know, powerful Black women all over the world, but who have, you know, have worked and lived in Washington, D.C. And the thing that I keep hearing is that this is not new to her and this is not new to Black women, right? We've never seen a Black woman in this position. We've never seen a woman of color in the position that she's going to hold after Wednesday. But being first and knowing how to maneuver and knowing how to be cautious, but also how to be fiery and have, you know, and do all of those things at the same time so that the world looks at you as someone who can do this job, so that the women keep telling me, most importantly, you don't close the door behind you. Right. And that's something people of color think about a lot when they reach a pinnacle, is that make sure I don't close the door, make sure I don't close the door. And that aspect has always been within her as she's done all of these jobs. Right. Don't be the last woman of color to be the attorney general. Don't be the last Black woman senator. Don't be the last now vice president of the United States. And that is going to be a huge part of the coverage around her, because there's a lot of excitement around her. And that also leads to a lot of pressure. And what does that look like? And how does she handle that? It's really important.
Well, yeah, on the other end of the challenges, I mean, there is also the fact that she's making major history here, you know, something that's being celebrated across the country. I'm curious, like, how are you personally, you know, as someone who's covering her and her role in the White House, thinking about this moment as America gets ready to swear in the first woman VP, the first African-American woman VP, the first South Asian-American, you know, a historic vice president.
Yeah, I think that, you know, in these moments as reporters, we often get worried of sounding biased, right? Like, oh my God, I can't say that this is exciting. Mm-hmm. But I think that's BS. I mean, I think objectively, in this time in America, it is some really something to see that a woman of color will hold that office, right? Just 12 years after the first Black man held the presidency. And I think about my grandmother who got me super obsessed with politics, Katie Daniels. She died in 2012, and she was a huge supporter of Barack Obama. She saw him get elected the first time. She, you know, died right before he was reelected. And she would say, oh, you're never, like, you might not even see a Black woman up there in as a vice president or president. And so I often, you know, as things have been announced and as I've been thinking about how I'm going to be covering this vice president and the people around her, like, I often think about my grandmother and mm-hmm. the stories that she would want to hear, right? Because the thing about being on Playbook and writing stories about the White House is that it is okay to be writing for people who maybe wouldn't have read it before, right? There's a different world now. And after 2020 and the huge upheaval in conversations about race, is that we can go beyond the Beltway based on the fact that at the very top or near the very top of the political ladder, there's a woman of color sitting up there who is going to be signaling to all little Black girls, little Southeast Asian little girls that, you know, it doesn't have to look like a white guy in this seat, right? It can look like that. It doesn't have to be someone that went to Harvard or another Ivy League. She went to an HBCU right down the street at Howard. It doesn't, it can be an AKA, someone from the Divine Nine. My aunts are AKAs, and they will be and have been just unbearable.
What did they say?
Oh my God, they are so excited. My Sarah, Kamala, like, they have never met her. And that's what's funny when you explain to people who don't understand Black Greek life. It's an always thing. It is a huge part of who you are, and it shapes you. Mm-hmm. And so what I hope to bring to the beat is a fuller understanding of that background and kind of what drives her. When I think about President Obama and the coverage around him, I often think there was, as media, as, you know, big M media, though we miss a lot of nuance of being the first and what that means and how you have to operate. Because you can't just do exactly what the other, you know, the old white guys did. You can't. The world does not allow for that. And I think that aspect of it was missed a lot of the time around Obama. And I think the Black women I've been talking to today also think that. And now there's a different world, and we've learned our lessons about how to cover someone like that.
Democrats have captured the Senate majority after winning two historic victories in Georgia's runoff elections. On Wednesday, CBS
So News with the two Democratic wins in Georgia, Kamala Harris will be the tie-breaking vote in a 50-50 Senate. So she'll effectively give Democrats control of the Senate. But I'm curious, beyond that, what do we know about what Harris's sort of day-to-day role will look like in Joe Biden's White House? And what it tells us about what her future could be in the Democratic Party.
The thing that I keep hearing from every single source, every single aide, is that she is his partner. And, you know, at the beginning, you're never sure, right? You're like, okay, I've heard that a couple of times, but, like, let me see it. And then at every single transition press conference, just about, she's right there.
And now it is my incredible and great honor to introduce our president-elect, Joe Biden.
Sometimes she's speaking, and I don't think we've seen a vice president-elect be that involved. She's in the room. You know, Joe Biden promised Kamala Harris that she would be always a part of the conversations, and that seems to be the case. You know, we've asked them, like, what's going to be her portfolio? And the thing that we keep hearing is whatever is top of mind for the country. She is going to be his right-hand woman For the first time, the president will have a right-hand woman. She will be his right-hand woman in dealing with all of the crises that happen in America. And I think that is a different way to approach the presidency than we've seen recently. You know, Vice President Mike Pence didn't seem to have a portfolio either, but that was also, he had a completely different, President Trump had a completely different way of operating. And with President Obama, it seemed like, you know, there was a huge foreign policy aspect for Joe Biden, right? He had had that experience and he would go wrangle down on the Hill. And Kamala Harris would, according to her aides, do whatever Joe Biden wants her to do at that time. So she will probably end up at the end of 4 years with this kind of huge swath of experience that she can use if and when she decides to run for president again.
Eugene Daniels, thanks so much for talking with me, and I'm looking forward to reading you in Playbook.
Thank you so much. Hopefully I don't mess it up.
I'm sure you won't. Eugene Daniels is one of four new Playbook authors alongside Rachel Bade, Ryan Lizza, and Tara Palmieri. You can find their first edition together out this morning at politico.com/playbook. Also, today, the Pentagon is authorizing hundreds of active duty troops to support enhanced security measures related to President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration tomorrow. That's according to two defense officials who say the 750 active duty personnel deployed this week include service members with expertise in handling chemical, biological, nuclear, radiological, and explosive weapons, as well as explosive ordnance disposal and medical teams skilled in trauma response. The active duty teams will join the roughly 21,500 National Guardsmen currently deployed to the area. That number could swell to 25,000 Guardsmen, many of whom are protecting the Capitol, armed with lethal weapons and riot gear. And Stephen Dillingham, the director of the Census Bureau, is stepping down this week following calls for his resignation from key Democratic lawmakers. In a letter sent to Census Bureau staff, Dillingham said he will retire on Wednesday. The move comes amid mounting pressure after the Commerce Department Office of Inspector General sent a memo last week alleging that he was pressuring Bureau employees to rush a technical data report on the number of unauthorized immigrants in the country. Dillingham was appointed by President Trump in early 2019, and he wasn't set to leave the post until the end of this year. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't yet, be sure to subscribe to the Playbook newsletter. Again, you can find that at politico.com/newsletters. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.